Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixel Chicken Team Up. I'm your host, Stryker, and with me I have Phil.
Hey.
And I have Johnny.
Yeah.
We are back for episode 2 of our new show. And we have some news to go over, not nearly as much as last week.
Dear God, no.
We had so much last week.
Last 4 weeks?
Yeah, it was really like a month's worth of news. And it was a big month for news. So, now this piece of news that I'm going to talk about. Well, first of all, how are you guys doing?
Doing awesome.
That's what really matters.
Doing great.
Doing good? Phil, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
How's life?
Life is good.
Currently,
life is busy, but life is okay.
Yeah. Now,
I can't complain. I really can't.
I have to say, you told me something before the episode started that I just want to touch on that's a big deal, that you applied for something.
Yeah, I applied for the second year graphic design program at LCC. Hopefully there's no typos in my essay, so it won't get rejected. But if that goes through, then I turn in a portfolio with a bunch of artwork, and hopefully they will select me for the second year program.
Well, you spell check, right? You didn't pull a George R. R. Martin and type it out in MS-DOS word processor?
No. I don't. What did he do?
He writes all the Game of Thrones books on a computer that runs MS-DOS using an old ancient word processor, so he doesn't get distracted by the computer.
Wow. Hmm.
Yeah, black and white.
Well, what I did was I basically just took it to the tutor room, the writing tutors, and they spell checked it and proofread it twice. So
that's pretty good.
Hopefully, it's all right.
That's good. Cool. Well, good luck with that, Phil.
Yeah, thank you.
What about you, Johnny? How's life?
I'm feeling pretty good here. We're all here naked. It's Naked Cast.
I forgot about
that. Don't forget, yeah.
Yeah, I was just... This is just how I record anyway.
I'm flying around like a helicopter propeller right now.
Wow. He was... Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Stryker was doing this
Leave
last
it to
week,
Phil.
Which was a little uncomfortable. But now, hey, we're all here.
So... I almost skipped over that, and I apologize, Phil, because that is big news. We wish you the best.
Thank
you. If you want to wish Phil good luck and send him good luck charms in the mail, actually, just by email would be better. So let's get into the news. Now, this piece of news it's a big deal, but it's kind of already resolved itself in the week that it
thank God
that it was released, and that was that Steam was experimenting with a sort of paid, like a mod. Payment sort of
and Bethesda.
Strategy and Bethesda. Yeah,
it they seems were... like it was just Bethesda or it was just Skyrim.
Yeah, it was just Skyrim to start off with, and they were going to see how it went and then go from there. Skyrim, Bethesda agreed to it, and they set the prices the pricing strategy, and then Steam okays it. And it was a way to... It was their attempt at giving developers some mod developers some incentive, I guess.
A 25%.
But yeah, that's the thing, is they only get 25% of the cut. So I don't know how much incentive that would be. And it wasn't received well at all. And obviously now... it was more news last week when we didn't get to talk about it. But now they already kind of put the kibosh on it. So
oh, good.
Yeah,
Freaked out. Gabe Newell said that it was costing their mail server more in incoming mail for the emails than it was for the profits of the actual because nobody's paying for them, nobody's buying them.
That's pretty amazing. For the outcry from the internet to be so bad that it's actually causing a financial impact on the company. That's pretty crazy. But I think it's for the best. You know, maybe there is something there as far as a strategy. I just don't think that was the best way to implement it.
The mod community is not one you want to mess with. That's
no.
Like toying with Pokemon fans or something. Like, like they are the ones that are going to whine the most, and you're not going to sell them anything because they don't have any money. That's why they're doing the free mod scene every hour of the day.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I think it was a bad idea, and it didn't. I will give them credit that it didn't take them very long to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, Valve has kind of a good reputation, right?
Yeah. For the most part. For the most part, they, you know.
They're pretty, I think they're pretty overrated in a lot of areas.
Yeah, I would say that they.
It's definitely kind of tarnished their.
Yeah.
Their streak.
Yeah, I agree. So, in other news, something that I think we kind of all saw happening, most of us anyway, Silent Hills was officially canceled.
This is probably the biggest crime of the year.
This was going to be a game that Del Toro claimed that they would try as hard as possible to terrify you.
To make you literally shit your pants.
Yeah, like most horror games, there's sort of a balance between scary and not scary, they said. And they decided that they were going to throw it out the window and just make the scariest fucking game that they had ever made. And that game's never going to be made now.
So what do you, Phil, you are a fan of horror games.
Kind of. I always want to play them. Sometimes I chicken out. Like, I still haven't finished Evil Within. But I'm, right. There's always a mystique behind them. There's just something that attracts me to them. There was something that attracted me to Resident Evil on the GameCube when I first played it. I knew I was going to be scared of it. I knew I wasn't going to be brave enough to play that far into it. I eventually did beat it a couple years later. But, I don't like being scared, and yet I constantly keep going back to it. I don't know what's up with that.
Well, there's something addicting about them, mm-hmm. I will say.
I'm a big fan of horror games. Big fan of Kojima. Big fan of Del Toro. I was thinking Del Toro Quest, the books here. It's just heartbreaking. They had the Dream Team. They had the perfect engine for it.
And they had PT, which was like a teaser towards the game. And we all played that.
Yeah, we all played it.
I didn't get very far.
As a huge fan of horror, going through PT was such a cool experience. And it's gone now. It's off PSN.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I managed to download it the night before.
That's the other crime in this, that PT is gone as well.
And they took the trailer off the internet, off the official Konami YouTube. It's gone.
It's like it never existed.
Yeah, and so you know that in the future you're going to go to websites and you're going to see, like, you know, the top games that never existed. And that's always going to be the number one, and it's always going to be that picture of what's-his-name from Walking Dead and the Silent Hills logo.
Yeah. And the thing is, that game built up a lot, or that demo, rather, built up a ton of anticipation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of horror games, I think, are kind of a sort, other than, like, maybe Resident Evil and stuff, mm-hmm. they're kind of a niche audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that PT demo came out, and people were, you know, they were excited about it. Like, just the general public was, you know, wanted more and were excited to see what happened with Silent Hills. And so it's unfortunate, and I think it would have definitely benefited Konami for that game to...
A little bit, yeah.
You know, the thing that...
The series been dead for a while.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that they're being very distant about it, as if they're pretending that people aren't as upset about it as they actually are.
Well, they're a corporation. You know, they got to make their official responses and make it not sound like it's the end of the world, but I'm pretty sure that we're seeing the end of Konami as a games front here.
I agree.
Yeah, and it just started to come crashing down so quick. All this controversy surrounding Kojima, it just started happening like this year. Before then, I never heard any complaints about Konami.
Ooh.
Only Square Enix and, you know...
Well, Konami has been very invisible.
Yeah.
They're not like Capcom where they're doing things just to piss you off. They usually release pretty good or okay stuff. They're not butchering anything.
Mm-hmm.
But them as a whole, like the actual Konami part,
mm-hmm.
they have been doing pretty bad. Like, their official board of directors has always been pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 7 years or so, they've made a lot of terrible decisions. But, they haven't branched out of anything. They just let Kojima do his thing. Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, other than that, you know, there's that weird thing. I believe they kicked out the creator of Castlevania a few years back. Or not the creator of Castlevania, but the Symphony of the Night guy.
Yeah.
Who was really... Yeah, he was doing great
stuff.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the nature of, like, big internal struggles like that with a large corporation. I feel like it'll kind of be quiet for a while and, like, little rumblings here and there, and then it'll just reach a huge explosion of of, you know, bad things happening like this. And like you said, I agree. I think that this is the end of... This is part of the end of Konami as we know them.
And well, I think they'll be around. I think they're just going to go through a massive downsize. So there's a few things.
And I think they're going to...
Sega kind of downsize?
They're going to switch their focus.
No, bigger. Worse than Sega.
So, well... Okay, so Konami actually rolls in the money from two things in Japan. And they're going to go 100% Japan.
Right.
The U.S. is never going to hear from them again. They have health and fitness clubs, and a lot of them in Japan. And they have pachinko parlors. They have a slight presence in arcade games. People seem to think they have more than because they used to have a huge presence. They had DDR, a lot of rhythm games. But when I was in Japan, I went to a lot of arcades. I went to everyone I could, and that was like 8. I mean, mm-hmm. And Sega dominates the Japanese arcade scene. They rock the rhythm games. They rock the Everett Fighters, all sorts of good stuff. Sega has their own arcades, and Konami just had like a few one-off games, so they've lost their arcade presence as well. Konami also pulled out of the stock market. They pulled a ton
just
of
the New
stocks.
York Stock Exchange. Yes,
New York Stock Exchange, right? I don't know what else they've got their hands.
I did hear after that almost like in the 90 percentile of their stock exchange is done through the Tokyo and I think London. Is that? I don't remember the other stock exchange, but that very, very little of their stock was traded through the New York Stock Exchange, so it wasn't as big of a deal as maybe it seemed. But now the other part of this that's kind of strange is that even though it seems like they're you know changing their focus in a lot of ways, they also did say that they're going to continue making Metal Gear games. So,
which is stupid.
Which I don't understand
And Silent Hill. Their statement was, we're going to make a new Silent Hill game. We're still going to make this Silent Hill. Yeah. They didn't call it Hills.
I just don't foresee really talented dev teams staying with them.
No, because they fucking suck at Silent Hill, and they have for the last like 3 or 4 games have been bad. And like, why would we want and trust them to make
it? And why, from a developer standpoint, why would you want to work for Konami?
Yeah. Oh, we got rid of our dream team. Here we can make a shitty Silent Hill.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, I think you were the one who made this point earlier. Was that they don't have an announcement for the new Pro Evolution Soccer that they do?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge seller. That's actually probably their number one, and they haven't even announced a new title for an annual soccer game.
That's a good point. So, the other thing that I thought was kind of funny is people are already selling PS4s on eBay. For like $1,500 that include the PT demo.
They're not selling.
No way.
No, they're not selling. They're just putting them up for sale.
That's why I downloaded mine.
Yeah.
If that actually starts selling, I'm flipping my... I don't care. I beat it already.
Oh, yeah.
I'll flip my PS4 and buy a new one.
Yeah, I don't give a damn.
I've got PT. Edition.
Flip it.
It's fuck.
But only if they start selling. Keep in mind that people put things up for sale. It's only if they...
You know, though, that like... 5 years from now,
oh, yeah.
It's going to sell.
I mean, I agree.
There are people who are selling their Angry Birds phones for
that's true.
Hundreds of dollars.
Oh, the, that one game, the Flappy Bird.
Or Flappy Bird.
Yeah. So the other piece of news, now we didn't get to talk about this last week, even though we wanted to, because we both, Phil and I, we both watched this series. But the last couple weeks, I don't remember when exactly it was released on Netflix, but. We watched Daredevil.
Yes.
And we loved it.
Yep.
Phil, what are your thoughts about
this? Okay, I thought it was going to be good. I didn't think I was going to love it as much as I did. I didn't think I was going to be as immersed in the world that I remember Brian Michael Bendis writing in 2002, 2003.
Frank Miller, for that matter.
I didn't think that I was going to be that actually immersed in that place. The lighting, the color scheme, everything that makes it like what it is. It is the comic books that I remember reading, but the panels they're moving, and everything is captured so perfectly. Everyone is so well cast.
Yeah,
I just couldn't believe it. And there's a lot of things about it that I think are kind of groundbreaking for the cinematic superhero universe. If it's like just whether it's like a new spin on an old trope or the fact that it's on television on Netflix, period. I think what's great is the fact that they didn't spend five episodes telling an origin story.
Now, I just want to say, we might give away some light spoilers here. So if you have not seen the show, yeah, plug your ears and just for a few minutes. But yeah, I agree. I really like that they kind of they went the route rather than having this long drawn out origin story where he was Daredevil already. Yeah,
he was already Daredevil. He wasn't in the costume that we know him for, but. And he wasn't being called Daredevil yet, but screw it. He was as Daredevil.
He was a vigilante.
If they wanted to do Daredevil Begins, they would have done the first five episodes cutting back and forth between him in college and him as a kid. And they didn't do that.
Right.
It was the first couple of seconds of him getting blinded as a kid, and then it cuts straight to present day. And I thought that was perfect.
Yeah, and throughout the series, rather than sort of give details about, you know, his surroundings and the other characters and stuff, they did that, but they also sprinkled in details about his past. Mm-hmm. So it was almost like a slow, it was almost like the reverse,
yeah.
Where you slowly learn about his past while his future is playing out.
And mind you, I haven't watched Arrow. I hear they did something similar with Arrow, which is fine. But I still absolutely, I love it in Daredevil, and I think it's a good way to do it. It's a good way to tell a superhero story.
I'm still hesitant to start Arrow. I'm a huge Green Arrow fan. I just was worried.
I hear that it's actually awesome. I'm not a huge Arrow fan.
The people that I know like it don't really share the same taste in TV show quality as I like.
Do they watch Teen Mom?
They like no, but they're big fans of any kind of drama that hits the TV and.
Do they like Hawaii Five-0?
Like I'm picky about. I don't really like Walking Dead. I think it's like a bunch of who dies next kind of thing, and it seemed like Arrow had the same following, but I could be totally wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard good things. I'm excited to see season two. I'll tell you that much.
Oh hell yes! I mean,
especially where it left off.
Definitely. I mean, where do I go here? I can talk about Wilson Fisk and how they built up to him, but then once they do that, you know, you're expecting this foreboding character because you know you don't hear his name till like the third episode, right? Mm-hmm. And then you finally get to him. Instead, you get this guy who you know is bad. But you're introduced to this lonely, wounded guy, and that makes him so much more fully realized.
Yeah, he was almost a very likable character in a way.
And then he bashes a guy's head in the next episode with a car door.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
That was metal.
It was like that was metal.
Yeah,
fucking metal, man.
It was metal as fuck.
Yeah, I thought he was all the characters, honestly, the supporting characters, other than. Karen Page, she's good, but sometimes I found myself kind of annoyed at her.
Oh, really?
That might just be my opinion.
No, go for it. No, go ahead and explain like how you feel.
I felt like just some of the decisions she made story-wise, I was kind of like, come on, what? Just tell them. I remember thinking that, but I don't know. Sometimes I feel like she... I understand they were keeping her kind of vague, like her past and stuff. But I found myself just not really... what's the word I'm looking for? I wasn't really relating to her as much as I was the other characters.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I like the fact... I mean, they're probably going to have Elektra next season. And she'll be the badass female kicking everybody's ass.
They did tease at her.
They did. And that was awesome. Hmm. And we'll talk about that. But... Yeah. I do like Karen Page for the fact that she's literally a normal person, but she's not archetypical at all. Like, she's very brave. She wants justice. She can't fight. She's not a badass, but
she does something pretty badass.
Yeah, she does something pretty badass.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And so, yeah, I dug Karen Page fine, but you know, I just can't wait to see where her storyline ends up. Like, anyone who is listening to this, who's watched Daredevil, but it hasn't read very many of the comics, it's like, dude, her storyline, dude, shit's gonna get crazy.
Shit's gonna get crazy.
It's gonna get fucked up,
You
man.
Heard it here first.
So, I don't know where the Daredevil kind of fits in the world of Marvel. I know that it ties in with Elektra.
Yeah.
That was all I know. Does it tie in with anything?
It does... It depends on who's writing for him, but Daredevil's always been more of a grounded character.
Street level.
Yeah, street, very, underbelly. Very street level, the underbelly of society. He's not...
Punisher?
Yeah, exactly. And he actually collaborates with guys like the Punisher a lot, because they both...
He hates the Punisher, but...
He hates them, but they end up working together a lot and working against each other a lot. Because Punisher, they have different philosophies. Daredevil's not... He's not killing people, and Punisher's, like, kill and ask questions later. But Daredevil's always been that way. A lot more human than most characters. And he's not dealing as much with, like, at least in my opinion, the best written Daredevil stories. It's not about, like, all this supernatural stuff, although there's a little bit of that in just, like, in any superhero comic, but Daredevil's definitely a lot more grounded.
Mm-hmm.
He collaborates and teams up with Spider-Man on occasion and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but a lot more grounded than your traditional Marvel superhero.
Yeah, I also thought the show was really smart on how, you know, it justified this new crime rate based off all the destruction that was caused during the Avengers.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I really liked how they touched on the events of the Marvel Cinematic Universe mm-hmm. without, like, overdoing it.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like a backdrop for how things were going on.
Like the little newspaper... little newspaper headlines on the wall.
Yeah.
In Wilson... Not Wilson Fisk.
Ben Urich.
Ben Urich's room. Sucks about Ben Urich, though.
Yeah. do you think that they'll bring in more of the traditional, like, villains and stuff in season two?
Probably, hopefully, in a way that's about as grounded as a show is so far.
Yeah, I agree.
There's probably going to be more ninja shit.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more ninjas next season.
Which is okay.
Yeah, perfectly fine.
I wonder if they bring in Bullseye, how they will incorporate
him. They can't bring in Bullseye without bringing in Elektra. I'm hoping that they do Elektra one season, then kill her at the... Shit. Sorry, man. Sorry to the people who know this. But,
Phil, those comics came out 30 years ago.
Yeah, fuck it.
Don't apologize.
So I hope they introduce her at the beginning of the next season, then kill her at the end of the second season, and just be done with that story, and then have the season where Wilson Fisk finds out about Matt's identity, and then conclude that with the entire public finding out about Matt Murdock's identity as Daredevil, and then tell the Brian Michael Bendis story. I hope that's what happens. I really do.
Maybe they'll hire you based on that.
Oh, yeah, they're going to...
You think so?
Oh, fuck yeah.
You think they'll... You're fully convinced.
I have 15 years of experience as a writer. I don't know shit. I don't know shit about writing.
Give yourself some credit.
But it would be great.
Of the 30-some people who've liked the page here, at least 7 of those are Marvel executives.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Interesting. Johnny's got the sort of those connections.
Yeah.
So he knows mm-hmm. something.
I bring him in.
Now, let's keep it with the superhero concept and move on to a video game superhero. Phil, mm-hmm. you might be familiar. His name is Batman.
Who? Oh yeah, he's this underground cult following. This indie
he's one
comic
of the
book.
Mole Men.
Yeah, he's one of the Mole Men, I guess.
So Arkham Knight is coming out in June, so mm-hmm. almost next month.
Oh, nice.
Very soon, and they released a new trailer. There's two pieces of news relating to Arkham Knight. We'll talk about the trailer first. They showed off a new trailer, and it was very very cool. Mm-hmm. It had Robin, Nightwing,
sweet,
and Batman, obviously, and someone else I'm missing. But it showed a lot of combat sequences where they were switching off and sort of like doing like tag team maneuvers, and it sort of implied that there was a character switching mechanic in Arkham Knight, similar to how GTA 5 worked.
That would be awesome to see them expand off that.
It would be really interesting, especially if those other characters were fighting alongside you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that mm-hmm. Have they shown that or
they in the trailer? They were. They were.
Oh
they
my
were all fighting,
God.
Fighting alongside each other, and like for example, Batman at one point like grabbed someone and like threw him, and then Robin ran up and kicked him.
And
then
the fucking Batmobile came up and blasted the guy.
It is awesome that they're coming up with these kind of ideas because you know by the third game. The fourth game, you're kind of wondering, okay, well, what can they bring to the table now, mm-hmm. since it's still taking place in Gotham?
Well, isn't this supposed to be the last last Arkham
game? Yeah, or the last Arkham game made by Rocksteady, but who knows what they're going to do.
If this is the last Arkham game, I am far more interested in it, and I am very happy, because I like I like a good series that's like a few games long, but I mm-hmm. think that every series needs to have its, or lots of series need to have its end point.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
And especially since Batman, the Arkham games are like a celebration of everything Batman, and yeah. just dump every villain and character.
And that being said, I wish they would stop, I wish they had stopped calling the Batman Arkham games Arkham anything, by the time they got to the third game.
Yeah, why is it called Arkham Knight?
I don't know. Like, the first game revolved around Arkham Asylum, the next revolved around
Arkham City.
Arkham City, this big kind of prison.
Silly. Yeah, it was silly. It was just, in my opinion, Arkham City was just kind of an excuse because there were constraints with the technology.
Yeah.
That they couldn't make actual living, breathing Gotham City, so they were like, well, the city's closed off because it's giant Arkham.
Pretend it's like Arkham. Yeah. I'm fucking But then Arkham Origins means nothing, and then Arkham Knight.
They told a story around it, I guess, though.
Nothing.
Yeah, they did. I just thought it was kind of. They did it well, and so I'm not.
Did Origins go back to Arkham?
No.
Arkham Origins took place in basically the same area as Arkham City.
Oh. But
Arkham Origins takes place before Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, it's a prequel. But we won't. I don't really count Arkham Origins since it was different developers.
Apparently, neither do the.
Yeah, they.
Rocksteady is like, what was Batman bad. Game? I don't know.
No, it wasn't. Just kind of eh.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. Yeah. So, I think character switching could be cool. I really wonder how it's going to work, though. Like, can you free roam as the other characters, or do they just show up in certain missions? And in those missions, are you actively switching at your leisure, or is it like a. Where they just follow you around and they're NPCs. Is there like a co-op system? There probably isn't. I don't even know. They might have even said that it's only one player. But, you know, it makes you curious when you see.
Man, if random characters are just jumping around the open world naturally, and then you're just fighting people, and all of a sudden they just kind of jump down from a fucking building and start whooping ass.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That would be really cool. That's a good point. It would also be really cool if. excuse me. It would also be really cool if. If you could play as them in, like, free roam and stuff, because in the past games they've had challenge maps where you could play as other characters, and they were awesome, like, mm-hmm. playing as them, but you could only do it in these challenge maps, which were really just...
Restrictive.
You were really restricted. Yeah, just combat or just stealth sequences or something. So I would love to play as Nightwing and just roam Gotham as Nightwing. That would be fucking awesome, mm-hmm. but I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. It made me very curious. And then the other part of this that came out last week or this week as well was that they are incorporating a season pass in the game, which, you know, a lot of games do that nowadays. But this season pass costs $40, which is...
Why would anyone buy it? Like I said, I made this point before we recorded. They're already gonna drop all the DLC material in some special edition release of the game, maybe like a year from now,
mm-hmm.
and you can probably, I don't know, trade in your old copy and get a new one or something. But
it's a good point.
$40 for a DLC. I'm not doing it.
That's no.
Now let me bring up. Maybe we can bring it up on here. The what they said this DLC incorporates, because. I read it and I came away
not understanding
what value this has or what's warranting this being $40 because
$10 to $15 more than the typical season pass.
Yeah,
I think there might have been a $35 one before.
Maybe I haven't. I mean, season passes. I remember them when they first started coming out. They were like there was a few that were like $20, and then you know you'd see like. Now in the last little while, you see some that are 30, but
Destiny's I think was 30.
Yeah, which I mean, Destiny was a MMO sort of,
even though they didn't do a very good job on their DLC.
But you're talking about with Arkham Knight,
two packs for that, by the way. It runs out after like the second DLC, and they're really short.
Oh, that's interesting. So with Arkham Knight, it's different because you're talking about a single player only game. At least that's what the way it seems. So. And even if they added like a lot of story missions and then some new skins, which they will, and stuff like that, I just don't see what's worth $40 about that. That's you're talking 2/3 of the price of the game.
I would. That's $100 for a Batman Arkham game at launch to get all the content.
I just hope it's not successful, because then they'll do it again.
And
it will be.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it will be somewhat successful. Although I will say, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they all get negative feedback from the masses, but this one seems to be fairly negative. And it's really too bad, because I have no doubt that this game is going to be really awesome and a really great finale for the series. And
yeah.
Rocksteady makes an amazing game filled to the brim with content. I mean, mm-hmm. Arkham City was just a ton
of stuff. I can't imagine wanting $30 of DLC in Arkham City.
Make that argument. Yeah, I agree with that too. Because
Like you said, I couldn't think of anything more I wanted. I wasn't like, boy, I could use some more Batman villains in here now. It's like there's fucking 30 of them, dude.
Seriously, yeah, that's the thing with these games is, I mean, they give you a ton of content, and I don't mean this as a negative or a knock on the game, but by the time I was done with Arkham City, I was done.
Done.
Yeah. I was like, this was awesome, but I don't want to...
Batman fans, though, I have a friend who is so into Batman that he beat the Arkham Asylum and Arkham City probably 8 times each.
That's sick.
I would
100% of them, too.
I would play it again, but I mean, the thing is, you're talking about now. It's a 6 month pass too, so you're talking about for 6 months.
That means it's not even the whole thing.
Well, I think that what they're rather than releasing over the course of a year, they're releasing over the course of 6 months, probably because they don't have enough content to release over the course of a year. You know, so
that just does not sound like $40 to me.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe. Maybe it'll come out and be a really good deal, but I feel like I'm sure that they knew that this was going to be a negative feedback initially, and they didn't really prep for that by giving you more information about what it's going to contain. Like, if I was, from their point of view, if I was bringing this out and I knew it was going to be $40, I'd be like, okay, well, let's at least give people an idea why it's $40. But no, they just were like, yeah, it'll have skins, new villains will invade Gotham, and a new Batmobile skin, and, it's $40.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't see what could make me want to spend $40 on a single-player-only game, but we'll see. I mean, I love Batman, and if it's good, I don't know.
For me, with that kind of thing, I think season passes are stupid, because if it's a game that I'm going to love... I'm still not going to buy the season pass, because when the DLC comes out, I'm going to judge the DLC when it comes out. I don't know.
Yeah,
Red Dead Redemption released Undead Nightmare, I would have loved more Red Dead Redemption. I could not give a shit about zombie DLC. Even though people seem to like it, if I subscribe to it, if they were like, ooh, Red Dead season pass, get the big DLC when it comes out, but you don't know what it is, and you buy $30, and all of a sudden fucking zombies come out, I would not have been happy.
that's a good point. I will say, Undead Nightmare, it was pretty sweet. I liked it.
It was. But,
well, I heard it was really good. I don't know how.
That is a good point though, because you're basically buying this pass and trusting that you're going to get your money's worth.
Yeah.
It's not like a game where you kind of know what you're getting. You read reviews and stuff. This is you're buying a pass for something that isn't out yet. You know. So it's I don't know. I we'll see. Another trailer got released this week for a game that maybe works. I don't know, Phil, how you feel about this series. I know your thoughts, Johnny, but Just Cause 3.
Yeah! You talked about that. You said it was a huge sandbox, a lot to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is hot on the heels of another Avalanche trailer in Mad Max, and they were very, very different.
Yes.
Obviously. Which I've since found out a lot more about the development behind those two games and how they are separated. But what did you think when you watched the Just Cause 3 trailer, Johnny?
So I'm pretty excited because I got into Just Cause 1 around the time it came out, and I was a huge fan of it. It was totally off the radar.
It really was. Just Cause 1 came out of nowhere, I remember.
Well, I remember hearing something about it from X-Play.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like... X-Play. Yeah, yeah. And it was like a PS2 preview, because the game actually did release on the PlayStation 2. I got it on the 360. But the game is gorgeous, Just Cause 1, in some ways. Like, it's got this massive sprawling world with lush, like, rolling hills and mountains and... the cool atmosphere of the South American, like, just the music had a lot of kind of James Bond kind of music, some, mm-hmm. a lot of little bossa nova, and just the really stylized. And just the fact that I was running around South America, mm-hmm. it really gave you that feeling that not a lot of games gave. And Just Cause 2 came out as a much better game because the gameplay in 1 was a mess. It was a Polish-made game from some guys who'd never made a game. Like, it was the studio's first game.
Obviously, that is one thing I just wanted to cut in because you said something that... At the time, it was very rare for open-world games to be anywhere, like, unique.
Yeah.
You know, they were kind of always stuck in, like, America and some, like, big... metropolis city, so I agree. I remember that being very unique at the time.
It was awesome. And the skydiving constantly, and just being able to rent, just have a gyrocopter just dropped off at your feet and take over regions with the, you know, it was an awesome game that needed a lot of work. So I really hope to see that atmosphere in the second game, and it didn't have that. It was a prettier game with its engine. But the setting was really bland. I was just not into the setting. I loved the game because it was way better. It was a lot of fun. And I don't think you'll hear a lot of people, you know, reminiscing about the good old days of the first Just Cause. But I think there's a lot of elements that I wanted to see. And the South America theme is and setting is back. You see Rico in the trailer spinning around on his motorcycle through a giant field of sunflowers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like riding around in Just Cause 1 on my motorcycle going through a field of flowers and the sun is setting and like beaming through the trees and there's this big church, this old church, and you're driving through a field of flowers. Stuff like that was really awesome, and there wasn't really anything like that in 2. It was just like a mix of North Korea and some island, and
yeah, it was mostly just all green. I mean, you'd have like these dense kind of rainforesty areas, and then just like sandy streets and stuff like that. But there was no, it wasn't, and there were like hills and stuff.
I didn't feel like I was in I don't know what country that got the first Just Cause is based off of. Guatemala. I don't know. I'm not gonna guess, but yeah, the game was awesome. The trailer looks good. I hope it's good. But it's not made by, like you said, it's not made by the same team that worked with Avalanche. Probably some of the people.
Yeah, I watched a dev video, and they said that they do a lot of cross team, you know, help and going back and forth and stuff like that. So
it's exciting for Mad Max though that they have the main team working.
I agree.
Because that's the one that needs the most work.
I agree. And I thought the same thing from the trailer. It's nice and refreshing to see more games in this day and age kind of, you know, there's a lot of the gray and grim and apocalyptic worlds that we've all explored over the last generation, you know, countless times. It's nice to get back to some nice, bright, tropical, like, just over-the-top areas and landscapes, and that's what I really like about
Just Cause. I want to cruise around on my speedboat hearing conga drum music blasting while I jump a freaking shark.
Like, yeah.
I want that.
I liked the... it showed off a lot of destructibility that seems cool, too.
Everything blew up in the trailer. Even the sunflowers, they blew up, too.
Everything blew up, so... So I'm excited for that. Phil, do you think you'll play that game? Did you ever play Just Cause 2?
No, I haven't.
No?
Yeah. You don't really need to, because this looks like Just Cause 2 with, like, what they did right with it, with a little bit of what they did right with the first game. But really, you didn't need to do that much to Just Cause to make a third game, which is why I'm confident that it'll be good. Because they're all okay, but they've got a great formula that no matter what they do with it, even if the story is the worst thing ever, which both games, they were the worst story ever. And I beat both of them.
Yeah.
Everybody's played those games, and nobody goes through the story. What a lot of people don't know is that if you stop right before the last mission, you have a lot more to do in the game, in the mm-hmm. open world.
Interesting.
They kind of force you to do that. So, especially with the first game, you couldn't do hardly anything. And so you beat all the missions until, like, right before the last one. And you could actually go, the map was separated into regions, and you could go around and do territory takeover missions to take over the whole map, which would take hours upon hours.
Nice.
Yeah, they definitely had no shortage of content, which is... I think that, honestly, the only thing that really, like, kind of bothered me about, too, was just some of the smaller, like, technical aspects, just, like, some of the animation quality and stuff like that.
Really, really snappy and weird.
Yeah, really, and kind of, like, floaty physics that were kind of off-putting.
The floaty physics was bizarre. I haven't seen the floaty physics in Mad Max, fortunately.
No,
because
not
there's
at all.
No, because there's no silly grappling hook. But the snappy animations looks totally like it's going to be in Mad Max, which is... Yeah,
we'll see. You know, and it could have been a function of the older engine, and hopefully they've made a lot of changes to it. So we'll see. Like you said, I mean, they can't really, other than having the game like not run.
Yeah.
They can really do no wrong with a new Just Cause game. Just
they already suck in lots of the technical areas, but they've got a great formula.
But they're just dumb fun.
Yeah, they're fantastic at what they are.
Yeah. Another announcement. Now I don't even know quite how to get into this one because it's kind of overwhelming. But Phil, why don't you just take over? I'm just speechless.
I would be, if I was obnoxious enough, I would scream dragon, fuck the dragon, ball Z. But I'm not gonna do that.
For a little backstory for you folks out,
I don't know the words.
I just know I know it for the American version.
When I was a kid, we all thought that the song said dragon. It sounded like it. We didn't really think that it was saying it, but it sounded like it says dragon. Fuck the dragon, Dragon Ball Z. But it doesn't obviously say that, but it sure sounded like it.
And kids, fans, nerds, ladies and gentlemen, out of nowhere, a new Dragon Ball series has been announced to be released during July. And this, I mean...
Super soon.
Yeah, super soon. So they must have been working on this for a long time. And Akira Toriyama, the creator of the franchise, has a lot to do with it. It is supposed to take place after the events of the Majin Buu saga. Based off what I've heard, Akira Toriyama hasn't gone on record acknowledging the existence of GT very much, which I understand he didn't have much of an involvement with, and I understand wasn't really praised by
it. It was not very good.
So, he had no involvement at all, actually.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, now, Johnny, you seem to have more anime knowledge than I do. I know the basics, like the essentials. I grew up with
Dragon
Ball Z.
Johnny knows nothing about anime.
Well, okay.
I'm just kidding.
What I was going to ask was, how long does it actually take to create an anime series?
Really, really fucking fast.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. They pump them out, and that's why it's kind of a fun industry to follow, is because you hear an announcement like, this series you've been waiting 5 years for... It's out tomorrow. It's like, yeah. All right. Movies and shows, they get put on a very tight.
Now, that's the thing that's strange to me. And based off my understanding, sometimes it takes years for a new season to come out.
They animate them an episode at a time.
Hmm.
They work balls to the wall. They sleep at their office. They get
so
nothing.
So this takes a lot of energy out of them.
So that's why filler episodes exist. They make the show as it goes along. They get about three episodes ahead or so. That's why they never stop. They don't break for seasons for mega shows like that.
Now, what I know is Dragon Ball Z came out the same time as the manga, and it took longer to make the manga, so they would make filler episodes to sort of wait till the next issue of the manga came out,
because
they were following that.
Yeah, it's always one chapter a week for Shonen Jump, and each episode is about 2 to 3 chapters of the manga. So,
if there's anything we know about Dragon Ball, it's that there was a lot of filler episodes.
Yeah, there was a shitload of filler episodes. I didn't even know what to call them at the time. Now I know.
With Dragon Ball, they did a lot of pace. They slowed the pace a lot, so they'd be like, okay, for these next five episodes, we're going to do a chapter an episode, like a chapter. You know,
there was a lot of that.
The charging up and stuff. I didn't watch the show, though, so I can't... It's like the one I haven't seen.
Yeah, we were huge fans back in the day. This is really exciting news. I'm really excited to see it. I like the... I like that it's going to take place after the fact, which pretty much, you know, this is sort of negating anything that GT did story-wise, because it took place after.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that Goku has turned into a kid again. So
in GT,
yeah,
yeah, that was weird. I don't think many people really liked that.
I don't think anybody liked GT.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I just be interesting to see what they can bring to the table this time. It would be great if, you know, they told a story, they developed the characters, and then made big fight scenes off of that. But we'll wait and see. I'm psyched for it.
I'm just excited to see a Dragon Ball series with, you know, much better animation quality than...
Some of it doesn't hold up. Some of it does.
Yeah, some of it does. And some of the, you know, there's been a new movie since then and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Or a few, and those are animated much better.
I just wonder if it's going to air on Toonami, or the Japanese version is going to come out on Netflix first, and then they're going to do the English dubs later.
You know that Toonami's going to have their hand in it, because... Toonami, they go to other broadcasting companies. Like, for example, recently it was Space Dandy. Aired as it aired in Japan. The dub aired on Toonami because the original creator was the Cowboy Bebop team.
Sweet.
For the most part. So, because they like Cowboy Bebop so much, and we liked Cowboy Bebop more than Japan did.
Yeah.
They came
to Sweet.
So I would not be surprised if Dragon Ball aired quickly on American television.
How was Space Dandy?
It was crazy.
Good. It looks crazy.
It was a very... I want to watch it. It was a show of one-off, wacky, nutty episodes. Different directors had their different takes on
Interesting.
Episodes.
The animation looks kind of old school.
It went absolutely nowhere, but it was like a comedy series, and... apparently got a lot better as it went on.
Cool.
I don't know about the dub.
So, Dragon Ball Super, coming out July. There's still not that much news on it, other than the fact that it seems to negate GT and the original creator has something to do with it. Can't wait.
Everything that I would want to be announced with a new Dragon Ball series, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so soon. We won't have to wait long at all to talk about this.
As somebody who follows anime and a lot of long-running shows and stuff... this has never happened. There has never once been a popular series that has been people have wanted to come back that actually comes back with original content from the creator. They'll come back for like a movie. And when they do that, they write like a little tiny manga about the movie, and then they make the movie. But with this, he's not even, as far as I know, he's not actually drawing a new manga. So GT was based off nothing and had no creator involvement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he's coming up with or how they're going to keep a whole show going, but this is unheard of. So it's people are really excited, and I don't even watch the show, and my jaw dropped when I saw it. I was like, what?
Based off my understanding that when he was writing one of the movies, one of the more recent movies, then all these new ideas started coming to his head, and then he wanted to do a new series. So
I like that. Yeah. I like that it started with his, like, thoughts going and getting creativity and went from there. So
I like that.
He's actually getting back in the manga scene. He's collaborating with a new artist to do a new series for something else. So yeah, he's getting busy. He's like, oh, I'm getting old.
Better churn out awesome shit.
Yeah. Yeah. all this time on my hands, kids
just
are growing
like,
up.
Just like the guy who made Kiki's Delivery Service. What's his name?
Miyazaki.
Yeah, I watched this great documentary on him. And the dude was going to retire, and...
He almost retired several times?
Yeah, this is
like Kojima style.
Yeah, this is his fifth time, and every time he's like, "Well, I'm gonna retire, but I'm gonna still make manga because that's what he first did."
Mm-hmm.
And he did it again. He's like, "Oh, I'm gonna make manga." And he's actually working on something, but everybody knows that he's so old now, though, that this has got to be it for movies for him.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I just watched a Ghibli movie last night.
What movie?
When Marnie Was There. It just came out.
Interesting.
It was very slow.
Another game that, this is completely switching subjects, but another game that got, the release date got announced. The game itself didn't get announced, but the release date did, is Mighty No. 9. Now, are you familiar with Mighty No. 9?
Yes, I am. I've been hearing about it for about the past 2 years.
Yeah, and... so it started out as a Kickstarter campaign.
It was announced at PAX.
Really? PAX, made by the guy who made Mega Man.
I was
Kaiji
furious.
Inafune?
Inafune, yeah.
Responsible for the arcade.
We are we are huge Mega Man fans here at Pixel Chicken, as you may know. I'm sure we've talked about it before. Specifically for me, at least, Mega Man X series,
because
that's where I grew up playing. So this news, when the game was first announced, we were super stoked about it. The concept art was released; it looked really cool.
Looked awesome.
It looked awesome. There was just nothing about it that seemed like, it's going to be an awesome game. That was just, I was very confident in that fact. Since then, they've released a lot of
playable demos for the people
that are backing it. And I gotta say, I have been less than impressed with what I've seen so far.
I don't want to be too critical on it. Just so my pretty fair, unbiased assessment looks like dog shit. Yeah, it's funny. It looks like a cell phone game. What's going on?
I'm not going to be quite that harsh, but I will say that there's just something that seems like it's missing from the game. It doesn't have the same.
There's a lot missing from
that. Yeah, there's a lot
missing. You could write a book on just what's lacking from the design is heart. Like you said once.
Yeah, heart is a good.
It looks like a cheap knockoff, like somebody's trying to copy Mega Man.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who doesn't understand what makes Mega Man good is like doing an independent project.
Because the dude that made Mega Man's making it.
The dude who made Mega Man bitches about the Japanese game industry every day.
Uh-huh.
He tweets all the time about when he goes to Tokyo Game Show, like 2 years ago, he tweeted, it's like, Japan is, games are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this industry is embarrassing. Like, he's just constantly putting his industry, an industry that he helped create,
mm-hmm.
he is slamming it. And, of course, that just shames all these other developers because they look up to him as, you know, the grandfather of Japanese games. And here he is, he's like, well, I'm going to come back and make a new game. And this is a game that is literally just the same damn thing as a game he made 2 decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a cell phone game. Not only is there no detail to the 3D models in the mm-hmm. game, and the animations are really poor, but there is no, like, placement of anything. You're fighting on incredibly bland maps. The fighting is just, you know, you just shoot and do a dash, and apparently it's just really gimmicky. The interface is poorly designed. There's a combo system that's stuck in your face. There's no innovation here. There's nothing but a big flop. And they've taken years to make this. Like you said, you
heard about this. What the hell happened?
What happened? There's a lot of money and a lot of time that went into making this game, and I don't see a single redeeming quality about it. Other than, I think that the character design's a little charming as, like, a cute Mega Man spin-off.
Yeah. One thing about it is that
it already has a fan base. It's got a fan base.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just not, it hasn't impressed me. And especially the level design has been something that I noticed that was very disappointing. And the level design itself, like, as far as the layout, and then artistically, the levels, they just look, what they've shown, the demos and stuff, and maybe these are just the confined environments that they're, you know, releasing because they're easy to put together or something like that. And maybe, you know, maybe the game will come out and it'll have like these awesome, you know, snow levels and jungle levels and different things like that that are unique. But so far what they've shown, it doesn't even look as good as some of the, honestly, like some of the 3D Mega Mans that they released on like PS1 and PS2.
Yo, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that graphically they look better, but I am saying that stylistically I think that some of them do.
There was a recent game called Asura Gunvolt, I think it's called. It's called something Gunvolt. And it released on the 3DS.
Didn't he have something to do with that game?
He did, yeah.
And that game is supposedly really good.
It's a very, very much a Mega Man game with a fraction of the budget and no advertising at all. And this game looks great. The 2D art is awesome. The character designs, you know, they're more anime-ish, but they're actual, you know, people with guns. And the guns have these special abilities, these handguns they have, to do all this stuff. And this gun vault. But the concept is innovative. It's still Mega Man, and it totally runs off that charm, but it looks great. Level design, all the 2D sprite art.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to pick the game up, and it's got a sequel coming. That, to me, is my mighty number 9. What I wanted back then, that this isn't quite it, but like it looks great. It got hardly any press. Most people don't know about it, and everybody knows about this game, which looks totally inferior.
You know what's funny is I didn't know about it until I was reading some of the comments and stuff about the Mighty No. 9 in the release date news, you know.
When is the release date? When is it coming out?
I thought it was September.
Yeah, it's just funny to me that this is a big deal about a game that looks and plays like this releasing. Like, is this got physical editions? They're printing boxed copy. Are they charging $60 for this game?
Oh, I thought it was a downloadable game.
You can get it on the PS4 and Xbox One with boxed copies, and it's a game that's got lots of buzz. Everybody knows about it, and here's this game, this Gunvolt game. Comes out on the 3DS as a $15 downloadable thing, and it was barely even... It had, like, maybe a trailer that nobody watched, and the game just came out one day. Like, it was just out. Like, I never even heard of it when it came out, and I follow that scene.
That's so strange.
And so this game that looks better, and the animation and everything, it looks like it took more time and heart to develop, has no spotlight. Meanwhile, this mess, everybody knows about it. And a lot of people probably don't realize how bad... It looks because of all the positive press it had for so long before they showed actual gameplay. And when they did show gameplay, people were like, oh, it's an alpha. And now the game's come close to release. They've released playable maps. Mega Man fans are playing them. And they're saying that the level design is just cheese. It's just not well thought out.
Mm-hmm. It's just going to be interesting seeing the creator get bit in the ass after everything, you know, that he's tweeted and ranted about and, you know, the industry could probably shove it in his face.
It's sad because I respected his opinion when he said it.
Uh-huh.
At the time, I was like, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of dated... Because his point was, Japan sticks to dated design schemes.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that he's wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. But
he's falling into the same
trap. He's doing it in the worst way possible. Yeah. He's doing it worse than all the other people. He's 100% living in the past, and he can't even live up to it. Like,
yeah, so, I don't know. I'll see how it is when it gets close to release. Maybe they'll release some levels that are different and will blow us away, but I just don't have high hopes for it like I did when I first heard about it, so that's unfortunate. Another game that was rumored and got actually announced this week is not an actual new game, but a remaster of Gears of War. it's done by, what was it, Splash Damage or something like that? I might just be lying about that.
The remaster?
Yeah.
I don't know who's doing recall. It.
But it got announced, coming out for Xbox One. It'll, you know, 1080p and 60 frames per second. Were you a fan of Gears of War, Phil?
It was fun to play. I played it at your house. It was fun hacking people up with a chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm not much of an online gamer and didn't have much of a campaign, that's basically as far as it went.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised they're not releasing like a remastered full trilogy where they're just releasing the first game.
It doesn't make sense. And Sony's doing the exact same thing. Gears of War 1, I had a blast with. I was a huge fan of it when it came out. I played the single player. I beat it 3 times. I played the multiplayer a ton. I was a lot younger then. That was 2006. The game still looks good, though. It's an HD game, 720p. Why remaster a one-off game? And they're doing the same thing. Sony's doing the same thing with God of War 3, which is newer. Like, why remaster games that are already pretty? Like, I get you're going to put it on the console, but then package it, make it a deal. You don't just bump it up to 1080p. That does not make a difference. That's when you're just nickel and diming.
Yeah, I guess I can understand, you know, releasing Gears of War in the sense that it had a strong online community. But at the same time, I don't get the choice of not releasing a... Because you know that the other ones are probably coming, you know, 2 and 3. Yeah. So they're going to release them all separately?
And if they do... It
seems kind of strange.
If they do, that's so cheap.
But especially after they just released the Master Chief Collection for a full-price game, and you get four games in it,
and then you get ODST as well.
Yeah, so like five, really. So I don't know, unless it comes out and it's like, you know, $10. that doesn't seem like a very good value.
I spent $7 on Gears of War like 5 years ago. I mean,
yeah, so it's kind of odd.
Yeah, I just these choices to remaster games. Some of them are really smart, and some of them are terrible. I love remastering games. A lot of people are like, oh, I hate this generation where we're just doing reboots and remasters. I think it's great because there are a lot of games that are either not on the console that I want to play it on,
mm-hmm.
or they're dated visually and they could just use a bump up. I had never played Metal Gear Solid until the remasters came out. I didn't play them until last year. And due to that amazing remastered collection, $22 for Peace Walker and 2 and 3 in beautiful 60 frames per second, 720p. I mean, I beat them all.
Yeah, and they're, and that, yeah, that's...
I beat Peace Walker too, and I would have never played them on the PSP.
I really don't mind. I'm not on the campaign that's against these remasters, because, you know, you got to take into account it's a new console generation and people are switching platforms that never got to play these games, so it makes sense. But these are, let's face it, these are older games. There's no reason that you should just buy a single, the collection part of it. I like that. I get that makes sense to me, you know. Sell the whole collection to me. I don't want to buy all three games, you know, by themselves over again. You know what I mean? I want, you know, a good deal out of it, I guess.
So. And then there's some instances where, like, the Devil May Cry HD collection, which had 1, 2, and 3. Or was it just 2 and 3?
No, it was 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, well, 1 is really dated and is good for the time, but there's no point to playing it now. 2 is, like, the worst game ever. I just want 3, and I really want it remastered. But they charge, like, $35. I'm not going to pay $35 to play 3. But yeah, I mean, even then, though, like, what is the other Kojima game, the mech one?
Zone of Enders.
Yes, Zone of Enders. Yeah, I bought that remastered. Like, I didn't know anything about that series. It looked really pretty. Like, I wasn't really into it, but at the same time, I was totally down with playing a series I was unfamiliar with. A lot of people didn't play it, and a lot of people still want to. Like, there's a niche market for it, and I want to see remasters like that, and we've been getting them. I want to see a Legacy of Kain remastered.
I'd like because that.
Those games are ugly as shit. All right, reboot them, do whatever. Apparently, the story is amazing and the gameplay is a lot of fun. But
I played a few, and I really, really liked those games. Yeah. I will be the first person in line and throw my money at anybody that makes an Uncharted collection for the PS4. And here's the thing: I had all of them for PS3 and played them and beat them, but I want them on PS4 in 60 frames. I would love nothing more than to play through those games again on my PS4 with 60 frames per second and a better resolution. Now, those games looked amazing as they were, but, you know...
Uncharted 1 really needs it. 2 will get a big facelift from it, and 3, performance-wise, 3 looked and played awesome, but 1 has not aged nearly as well as the others.
Yeah, I agree.
As somebody who just played them. So I'd love to see that. I mean, I wouldn't probably get it, but I think it would be a very fitting one for recent games.
I wouldn't let you borrow mine.
Because you just did.
I want you to buy your own. Yeah, I guess I did let you borrow it already.
Yeah, I already borrowed all 3 games.
Yeah, that's true. So that's pretty much wraps it up for news, I think. There's a few other things. But I think I would like to get into what we've been playing. Actually, let me talk about one more thing. I just saw this on the list and I wanted to cover it. It'll be quick. Dirt Rally came out on it's an early access game on PC only. And I thought it was really cool. Literally the day that it came out, I was watching Dirt 3 footage on YouTube. I'm a big fan of these games. I really like rally racing, and these games to me are really fun, and I really like the series, even dating back to the Colin McRae game on original Xbox. But anyway, I was watching Dirt 3 footage on YouTube literally an hour later, and I'm thinking while I'm watching this, man, I wonder if Codemasters is going to make a new Dirt game sometime. You know, they made some other games in the last little while, and I wonder if they'll ever go back to the Dirt series. An hour later, I see a headline that's Dirt Rally, the new Codemasters rally racing game released on Early Access. And I start looking into it, and it's gotten really positive feedback. They released a patch not 3 days after the game came out on Early Access to touch on some of the things people were complaining about. So that leads me to believe that this is one of the good, you know, good early access games.
Oh yeah.
And I've heard really good things. I hear that it's very difficult and realistic and much more like the early Colin McRae games than maybe like Dirt 2 or or 3, which is exciting. I'm looking forward to playing it. I plan on.
I have an Oculus Rift, so I follow all the news for that.
Playing a racing game with the Oculus would be insane. Dude,
well, not
did you
only
play
that,
PT with that
you can't.
Wait.
So it's just PC.
Shit.
But okay, so that's just a thing. They've already released an Oculus Rift official support patch. Not a lot of devs are doing that. Dirt did
for
that
for Dirt Rally.
Dirt Rally already has done it. That's rare, and that's big kudos.
And
that's
it came out this week.
So there's only a few developers that have done that, like Elite Dangerous and, believe it or not, Alien Isolation.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which was vomit inducing.
Yeah, I bet.
There's something about the way I set the height, so my head was touching the ceiling, and it made me sick. I'd never become sick from, it was...
The thought of somebody, moving their head around wearing an Oculus, and then all of a sudden vomiting, is really funny to me.
Hey, George, you liking it? Yes. It's the future, man. It's too real.
So I just wanted to touch on that. I really think that's cool, and I've never when I get it will be my first early access game, and I'll reserve my judgment till I try this out. But it seems like they're doing positive things with it. I like that they're already releasing updates and stuff. Not even when the game's been out for a week, so that's cool.
They're speaking of early access, and this is actually kind of news. I was going to transition this into the what are we playing thing, but Broken Age Episode 2 just came out,
mm-hmm.
and that game was an early access release. It was very controversial because Tim Schafer, a lot of people knew that that was like the first big kickstarted thing, like alongside the Star Citizen. Was a new Tim Schafer adventure game to bring back, the adventure era. And they released Episode 1 last year, and people are used to the Telltale release model. So a lot of people were very disappointed to see that it took a full year to release the next one, because there was a lot of development hitches and there were budget problems. They didn't make enough money. People said that Tim Schafer screwed up. In fact, this thing is so negative... has so much negative outcry, that's the only thing you can hear about the game. I just got it last night, and I started playing about an hour. And it's a really cool game. The story is really interesting. Apparently it kind of rushes to a close because they ran out of time and budget near the end. But each episode's like 3 or 3.5 hours long, so it's not like it's a big deal. It's
how many episodes are there?
Just 2.
Okay.
But it's like, okay, so it took 2 years for us to get the whole... Or it took a year gap between 1 and 2 to get the whole game. But big whoop. The game's still 7 hours after the fact. Or 6... Maybe... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can do it faster. I'm not sure. But all I know is that people are whiners. And the game is sweet. And nobody's really talking about that. And so that's just another one of those things. There's like all these people going around with like... conspiracy theories about what they spent their money on, and they start like listing Tim Schafer's budget plan and how he's really funneling it away, our money. It's like, okay, dude, you spent $15 2 years ago on a game.
I saw Tim Schafer eating a $70 steak the other day.
Oh yeah, stuff like that. and so people totally disrespect him. They call him an asshole. If you look at forum posts about this game, they've lost all respect for one of the grandfathers of video games.
I didn't know we were talking about Tim Schafer earlier today, and talking about some of the games he did. I knew about Grim Fandango and some of his other games. I didn't know, however, that he was the Curse of Monkey Island series.
All the Monkey Island
that he was
Full Throttle
part of that as well.
Maniac Mansion, Night of the Tentacle or whatever. No, he didn't do Sam Max. He did the Indiana Jones adventure games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Fate of Atlantis.
Oh, and the Infernal Machine. He's amazing. Every game story that he comes up with is just spellbinding. That's the best. So I'm going to plug Grim Fandango here because it's a recent re-release. And that is another one of my favorite remasters. So just like Metal Gear... I have a lot to thank re-releases for, or HD packs. Because I never played Grim Fandango, and I got it right when it came out. And I beat it in pretty much one day, and it's a long game. It's like, for an adventure game, it's like 14 hours with a guide.
Wow.
Yeah, back in the day, man, like, you make a point-and-click adventure game, the puzzles are so fucking hard. You just spend like 30 hours.
I don't know if it was that they were hard, they just never made sense. It was like...
They don't, yeah.
you had to use the brute force technique of trying every, you know, every tool that you had or every object you had until you found one that worked.
The story in Grim Fandango and the setting and the music and atmosphere and the voice acting, everything is perfect. And as I was playing it, I was just totally absorbed in it. And by the time I'd completed it, it blew me away. I never expected it to be half, a quarter as good as it was. It's worked its way probably into my top five games ever made. And here's this game from 1998. That I expected nothing from. I'd seen bits and pieces. I kind of knew that it was like going for like a noir movie kind of thing and like a Casablanca kind of thing. Oh, man. If you like movies, if you like classic film, noir style, just, man, that game is just oozes creativity. It's got stuff in it that is still really... It's just magical.
I hear that's a pretty funny game, too.
It's got good humor in it, but for the most part, it's got a really cool world.
You gonna pick it up, Phil?
Sure. The game is far more of... Like, because when I saw footage from it, I saw a skeleton in a suit selling, like, death insurance to people who are trying to walk to the afterlife. But he's walking around in a suit in the middle of the city, you know, downtown, in a swanky, noir kind of setting. And I thought that looked kind of cool. But what I didn't realize is that the game is an epic, and it is like a serious epic journey that takes place over many years and many different settings, and it's like it covers different movies each year. It's amazing. That's like that part that I knew of the game was like the first 20 minutes. It just gets better and better. And
I'd really like to try it.
It's a game that you won't totally be... Like, it's cool at first, but you won't totally be absorbed until you really... And I recommend this. Get a guide, because in this day and age, puzzle games aren't... Unless you love shitty puzzles. I love puzzle games, not because of the puzzles, but because of the storytelling that comes around in an adventure game. It reminds me of like my childhood. Without it being childish, they've got like this serious imagination. And yeah, so that... I won't talk too much about Grim Fandango, because I played it like a couple months ago, but... Yeah, you guys play that game. It's amazing.
I think you might have sold me on it. I know you sold Phil. He just immediately said yes that he's going to buy it. So
at some point.
On that note, Phil,
I'd love to try it.
Totally. What have you been playing this week?
So I've been playing Final Fantasy IX. I'm getting into the second disc. First of all, I love it. And here's the thing: I'm not playing Final Fantasy IX for nostalgic reasons, like I would be for 7 or 8, because when 9 came out, I wasn't really into it. I wasn't into how the characters were proportionalized. For some reason, I thought it was, I don't know.
Let's be honest, you wanted bigger titties.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I wanted. No, I just felt like for some reason, it's like, okay, we did Final Fantasy 8, where it was sort of a bit more, well, I mean, it's kind of awkward to say this in 2015, but a bit more realistic looking. And then they go and kind of make them look sort of like Disney characters in 9, and that was the problem I had with Final Fantasy 9. It is now years later. I don't have that problem anymore. I think that Final Fantasy 9 has some of the most interesting and unique cast of characters in the franchise. I love them. And yeah, it's a great game.
So you're on the second disc, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Out of four. Out of four?
Yeah, and I'm trying to escape Alexandria... with Steiner and trying to save Dagger.
Rick Steiner, the wrestler?
Yeah, I'm hanging out with Rick Steiner.
Well, that's cool.
WWE made a deal with Square Enix at the time.
So, what is that all you've been playing?
Yeah. No.
I would love for a WWE Square Enix crossover game, kind of like Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, yeah, that'd be sweet.
I mean, it would make just as much sense as Kingdom Hearts.
That's a good point. I remember when Kingdom Hearts first came out, I was like, what?
And then you beat it, both of them, and you're like, I'm even more confused.
But anyway... So last week you guys talked about the next DSX game. Now I mentioned that I never beat it.
As in you never beat Human Revolution?
Yeah, I never beat that. Gotcha. I never beat Human Revolution. I never beat the game that is currently out, the most recent one. Now, I remember not enjoying it all too much, not because of the game itself, but at the time I had an old, outdated TV screen and the text was too small, I can barely read it. And by the time I got a better screen, a new game came out, and so I never went back to DSX. But due to the talk of the next game and an interesting retrospect that I read on Cyberpunk and Blade Runner and Ghost in the Shell, I decided to start DSX over from the beginning last night. And I'm eagerly awaiting enjoying the game as I get further into it much more than I did the first time around. I think I'm going to have a much better time immersing myself in the universe. And of course, there's not going to be as much, as you mentioned, Johnny, last week, there's probably not going to be as much influencing and charming, conversations going on as shooting, but that aspect will still be there. I can't wait to see just the cities that were developed, and I can't wait to just enjoy the game the way I intended to enjoy it the first time around.
How far into it are you this time?
How many
hours have you put in so far?
So far, I've actually probably just put in an hour and a half.
Okay, so you're right there at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm right there at the beginning. So, gotcha. But like I said, that's why I'm eagerly awaiting just enjoying the game how I plan to enjoy it the first time. So I'm excited.
Cool.
Really excited.
For me, the game really became enjoyable to me. Like, I knew that I was going to like it as soon as it opened up with side quests, and it was like, oh, you can go here, but you can turn left and right.
Yeah.
As soon as that happened, I was sold. But I was in love with it when the police station mission happened. But you did all that before, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It was at the very beginning. It's the first big mission after the first set of side quests. You get to the
I remember that.
That level design is incredible. I can cite that. I remember every facet of that because I did it 12 times. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is awesome. I want to replay this because you could do it so different every time. It was awesome.
Yeah, I really like that. That game did choice. Really well. I hope that carries over. That's something that games don't sort of expand on that I feel like they could. That's something that I feel like that was one of those things that kind of got lost in the shuffle along with good AI, where it was a big deal to have to give player choice during missions and stuff early on in the last generation. And same with AI, it was a really big deal to have really smart AI that would do all these cool things and act, scared or act human and flank you and stuff. I think about the first Fear game. And then that kind of just got lost in favor of other, putting emphasis on other things graphics and having crafting more players, systems. Crafting systems, having more NPCs on screen. And did you say fuck?
I don't like crafting systems. Oh. I don't like the recent use of them because they show up in like when I saw crafting on Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah,
it's like why?
I remember that. I think that was Assassin's Creed Revolution or something. But yeah, that kind of got lost in the shuffle. But Deus Ex Human Revolution did that really well, and that's one thing that was really cool about it. I hope that carries over to the sequel. Have you been playing anything else besides those?
Those are the two games.
Cool.
Other than Mortal Kombat X, which you already talked about.
Yeah, I'm playing that too. What about you, Johnny?
Well, I've been playing quite a bit, considering it's only been 6 days since we recorded the last podcast. But
you're breaking the fourth wall. They're not supposed to know it's 6 days ago that we recorded.
Oh, fuck, I'm sorry you didn't hear that. Okay, so...
You gotta call Vince about this, man. He's not gonna be happy. He pulled a CM Punk, man.
I like all these WWE references you're making.
Yeah, I don't know. That just came out of my ass.
Witcher 2. I beat The Witcher 2. It was good. Yep.
After beating it, do you feel more excited to play Witcher 3?
I am super hyped about Witcher 3 on its own merits, and I really enjoyed The Witcher 2. But you probably don't really need to beat it, but it definitely got me in the Witcher zone. It got me in the Witcher mood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much the game's gonna carry over. I don't really fully understand how. It seems like it's years later in that where The Witcher 3 takes place. So Witcher 2 is a really cool side story
The last act of the game was so short, it was unbelievable. And if I hadn't played the Enhanced Edition, which adds like 4 quests to the story,
mm-hmm.
For if you pick Vernon Roach's path, it would have been even shorter. Like, it's... I'm talking like, if you didn't have the Enhanced Edition, it was like an hour and a half or 2 hours, for the including the epilogue, when the Act 2 was like 10 or 11. And so it's like, yeah, Act 3. Witcher 1 had 5 acts. And Witcher 2, you get into Act 3, it's like, okay, yeah, cool. Act 3, game's over? The act just started, because you get to this really sweet place. But yeah,
interesting. I felt personally satisfied with the length of the game.
I was satisfied based on how the game was.
Mm-hmm.
If the game was more open, or, you know, less tight and linear,
constrained.
Very constrained, I would have been very disappointed with runtime. But at the same time, like, I was happy with the ending whenever. And I was also happy with the ending. Even though it was like a super rushed info dump kind of ending. Well, at least the way I did it. It was really cool. Like, I really liked it, and I felt happy with it. I was kind of surprised, because I'm like, this is really lazy. I like it. it's one of the few times it's worked.
It made me wish I could go back and correct some of the decisions I made.
Yeah, if you go through as Eorveth's path,
mm-hmm.
apparently... it is really the ultimate path, because it sounds like you're just buddying up with Eorveth.
Mm-hmm.
I had it explained to me that if you do the right things, you pretty much, like, you can make everything, you know, buddy with Eorveth, buddy with Roach, buddy with, because, and I think that kind of naturally happens, but since mm-hmm. I picked Eorveth's path, or Roach's path, Eorveth kind of got pushed to the sidelines, mm-hmm. and he just wasn't a character in the story anymore.
That was my story.
Before he really got introduced. And I was sad, because he was kind of a cool character, so...
See, I just detracted from the game. I'm hearing this, and now I don't know anybody that's played... I know a few people that play the game. I don't know anybody that picked Yorvith's path. So I'm going to correct that, and I'm going to... When I get to that, I'm going to pick Yorvith's path.
Sweet.
I have a friend who did it. He said... And my friend is a big fan of Vernon Roach. He's like, yeah, Roach, bro.
Roach is awesome.
Well, you get some Vernon Roach bromance.
Cut your balls off and shove it in your mouth.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
Go ahead, just continue. You saw that, right? You didn't see that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Wow.
He really roached him.
Yeah.
Is that the new term for it?
Yeah. That was, So there were some interesting turns, twists and turns with the Roach path, but... it's far more interesting in Eorveth's path. You do kind of cross the same areas. It's just the better path, which is sad, because it's like, this is clearly the way the story is meant to be played, and it pushes you in the direction of Roach as a first-time player. Even when it gives you the at a crossroads mission where it's like, pick one or the other, you don't actually know that you can pick one or the other. It's just like, oh, they kind of say in the dialogue, it's like, well, you can talk to Eorveth. Yeah, he's in the prison or whatever. And it's like, okay. It's like, and then there's Roach, he's over there. You're like, okay. And then the quest tracker brings up the Roach one right away.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go in and change the quest tracker to Eorveth, and when you go and talk to Eorveth, it sets it in stone. Cancels out the other quest.
Yeah, then you have to deal with the da-da thing, like, several times. You know? Like, when there's one path, one mission that you have the option of going in, when you choose another path, you automatically fail that one.
Yeah,
it still just makes me, like, I still hate hearing it.
It's not satisfying.
Yeah, that part's not satisfying.
Interesting.
Yeah, you failed the mission of picking the other path. It's like, what? Well, I mean, come on, pick one. Thanks, game. But yeah, it was a good game. It was a good story. It very standalone. It got me prepared for The Witcher 3. But if I played it back when it came out, I would have liked it a lot more. And instead, I felt like I was just kind of doing it to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really glad I did. Man, it's so satisfying getting a game that's been on your backlog for 5 years out of the way.
Because
I mean, the game is 4 years old, a little over 4 years, and I pre-ordered it 5 years ago. You know, paid it off, and I never played it beyond the.
I hate when that happens.
The Karen. And I never saw anything past that, ever. And so I'd always... It was like a top priority backlog game, too. So, man, it's like a big burden is lifted off my shoulders. I'd beat The Witcher.
So, and you already mentioned Broken Age.
Yes, yeah, Broken Age. And then, so, the other two would be Shantae and the Pirate's Curse. Just came out on Steam. It was originally...
This sounded really interesting, by the way.
Yeah, it's a Wii U 3DS platform, Metroidvania kind of thing.
Sweet.
A lot of Legend of Zelda influence.
Anytime you say Metroidvania, Phil is on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that.
It's very Metroidvania. It gives me the feel of Guacamelee...
Oh, I'm on board.
...with anime titties. Because okay.
I'm off board.
I'm just kidding. Very much a female-centric cast. A very funny sense of humor the game has. It's kind of lighthearted. And it's the third entry in the series. A series I'd never heard of. I looked into it. The first Shantae game came out on the Game Boy Color. It feels very Japanese. The pixel art looks like Metal Slug in the game, in a way. In that it's very low-res, but very smoothly animated. It was very pixelated, but animated. If that makes sense. The first game was on the Game Boy Color. A copy of it's so rare it's worth like $350 because it was like a really niche, like people liked it, but...
You hear that, Phil? You can sell your PS4 with PT and then buy this game.
Yeah, you can buy the first Shantae just to get caught up in the plot.
Sweet. How much does Shantae cost?
$350.
Game Boy Color.
Serious?
Just for the Game Boy Color.
It's really damn rare.
Yeah, that's why I did.
I had to get a Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You all have enough left over.
No, there's two more after that. There's Shantae Risky's Revenge that came out a little while ago, which apparently is fun gameplay, but the graphics don't look nearly as good. But people really like that, and that's on Steam. And then the recent one came out last year on 3DS and Wii U called Pirate's Curse, and that's kind of like the best one in the series. There's a new one that's kickstarted, and it doesn't have the pixel art. It's got like kind of what Mighty No. 9 was supposed to look like, that kind of 2D flash sort of art style.
Sure.
But yeah, this game is just
a really interesting release path that this game series
is. It's bizarre. They're just doing whatever they can make, release it on.
You want the game? You want the game? All right, you'll go.
There's just these people that follow it, and it's just the developers have really good level design, really good charm.
The next one will be Linux only.
Yeah. And it's a very satisfying game to play, because I don't typically get into indie titles. You know, Shovel Knight came out. This is kind of a similar deal where it's calling back to retro games. But I wasn't that interested in Shovel Knight. Mostly because I wasn't interested in a game that looked 8-bit. I liked, you know, Castlevania.
We all grew up, I think, with the 16-bit era as youngsters. Mm-hmm. So a lot of games, retro-inspired games that release nowadays, are all done in an 8-bit style. And I wish more games would focus on, like, that 16-bit
16-bit
era.
Has the same kind of charm, but it's just, it's less...
It looks
dated.
Prettier.
Yeah, it's not dated. And Shovel Knight comes out, and it's like, oh, cool, I remember dated games. Like, yeah, there's great gameplay that came from, like, the original Mega Man and Castlevania... But then there's fucking Mega Man X and Super Castlevania. And Super Castlevania wasn't that good, but they looked great. They had the best soundtracks. Like, I want that.
Speaking of 16-bit, there's a new sort of Metroidvania game out on PlayStation 4. Have you guys heard of it? I forgot the name.
Apotheon? No.
I don't think... No. Versus...
Titan Souls? No.
Not Titan Souls. It looks like a 16-bit game. It's very influenced by Super Metroid. Like, it looks like Super Metroid.
Oh, Axiom Verge.
That's exactly it.
It's a really weird-looking game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend who's played a lot of it. So people seem to like it.
I've seen it. It looks great. It looks like the... It
looks really weird.
Yeah.
It does. It looks interesting.
Like, someone made the point, like, the 16-bit graphics, it wouldn't have been able to look as good on a Super Nintendo. Like, this is, like, the next step up. I think I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But basically, it looks great. That's what I'm trying to say. And, I like to sink my teeth into that. I'd like to try that.
I've been looking at that one. Another game that's got similar retro-style graphics... That I got. That's the other game I've been playing. It's Westerado.
Oh yeah, this game. This looked really interesting to me when you were showing me the video.
It's
Westerado.
It's Westerado.
So is it like a Western game?
Yeah. It's published by Adult Swim Games, made by some new dev team. It's on Steam for like $15 or $20. Destructoid gave it a 10 out of 10, so I was like, oh shit. Because they were like, this is the ultimate revenge game. Because the game starts out, it's in the West, old pixelated graphics, and it's a really interesting world where it's Wild West, very typical Wild West, but like, it's super over the top. Everybody carries around a gun, and they use the gun like an everyday tool to open doors and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the health system is hats, so your brother gets shot at the start of the game, as well as your ma and your chickens. Your brother's, he's dying, and he tells you, he's like, oh, I should have wore a hat, and I could have taken a bullet. Because if you wear a hat, you can take bullets, I guess. But yeah, he says, the main bad guy, the guy who killed me, all I could see was he was wearing a flat-brimmed hat. So you get this detail, you know, new thing added to your journal, the guy you're looking for revenge, he's got a flat-brimmed hat. You don't know what color, you don't know what else, so you got to find out more. So basically, you go around this sort of open world in a top-down
See, when you style. Told me about it, I thought it was going to be like just a straight-up like a shooter game.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's like an adventure game.
Yeah, it's very much. And so you can talk to anyone. You can convict any townsperson. And you can draw a gun at everybody and shoot everybody, including story characters. So your uncle saves you at the start of the game. And he's like, hey, I saved you. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I love you. You're my like a son to me. And you're like, okay, yeah. And you just draw your gun. You shoot him in the fucking face. I totally did it. And then he immediately turns into a ghost. And he's like, now, why'd you shoot me for? Oh, well. he just keeps talking to you like nothing happened. There's all these great details.
I like
you're just
that.
Like, you're just kind of like, I wonder what'll happen. And
so is it kind of like a lighthearted, like a sense of humor? Or
it's,
is it?
It's, yeah, it's clearly. Kind of a dark sense of humor, the game.
I like that.
And, I mean, it's Adult Swim published, so you would have to.
That's a good point.
So you're just hunting around in this open world, and there's all sorts of cool little details. Like, at one point, I went to this, like, fort that had all these Union soldiers, and they have this locked gate, and I couldn't get through it. And they start sending me on a quest, and if I do the quest, they'll give me details on the killer. There's like 16 different ways to get details on the killer, and you only need like 7 details to figure out. I just need to figure out what color pants he's wearing, and I can just look for him. I have all of his looks, so I just find NPCs that look like, you know, he's got a white hat, flat brimmed, you know, he wears a tie, has an evil grin. But so it's a kind of a short game. It's a couple hours.
Sounds like where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
It is. It's got a lot of that. Got a lot of Clue kind of thing. And when you finally find the guy, and there's actually some dungeons and stuff you go through. When you finally find the guy, you kill him, of course, and you get your revenge. And then the game starts over. And when it starts over, there are 3 other characters you can play as. There's a woman, an Indian guy, and maybe like an outlaw guy. And they have different stories, and they hunt for different killers in the same world. So then you go through and you do the quests, because there's a lot of options to get these little details to hunt down and just do. It's a simple couple hour long revenge game. So yeah, it's not a lot of people have heard of it or played it, but it's not amazing, but it's got really cool, like, as a fan of Western stuff, it's got a very samurai gun kind of art style and feeling, mm-hmm. where it's just pixels and simplicity, but you do feel like a Wild West badass. At one point, I started dual wielding pistols, and when you draw them, your arms are spread out like this. You have infinite ammo too, so you can just shoot people in both directions. And
I like that.
It's
good. I
want to
play.
It's a good simple game. I'm into it. I'm gonna beat Shantae because for some reason I'm into it. It's just weird. Whenever I get into a Metroidvania, there's no explaining it. I can't tell you why it's really good, but I just, like, get into it. And sometimes I don't at all. Like,
you're just weird, man.
Yeah. There are good Castlevania games I've yet to really get into. Like, Symphony of the Night is awesome, but I've yet to beat it. But then I played what's considered to be the shittiest one on the Game Boy, Harmony of Dissonance, mm-hmm. which is it's a Symphony of the Night type game. But it doesn't have all the weapons, it's just a whip, but it's got all the other mechanics. And I loved it. I just beat it. I emulated it, and I beat it. I don't know why. It was like 12 hours. I totally didn't.
You know what your problem is? You're going to get laid out.
Yeah.
That's your problem. So.
All the Castlevania fans.
Well, I think that's a show, fellas. Talked about news, talked about what we've been playing. Obviously, there wasn't quite as much news as the 4 weeks that we were that we were not recording. So
did you talk about something?
Well,
what the fuck
well,
are
Phil,
you playing?
Hey, take it easy on me, all right? I haven't. I guess I did play the Mario Kart DLC, which was pretty cool. The Mario Kart. I mean, they can't really do anything wrong. They're awesome levels. They're fun and they're.
I played
beautiful.
As a dog poodle, and I did one of the maps.
Cool.
Yeah, that's about what I have to say.
Yeah, I actually really like the DLC levels, and I like that Nintendo's trying their hand at DLC and actually doing a good job of it. I'm curious to see what they do with Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, there's a bit of controversy. I don't even know I need to say that anymore. They're releasing the Mewtwo.
Yeah.
As itself, I'm not that into it. That they're doing it that way. I'd rather. I guess it's cool that. They release them one by one, so if I'm like, oh, I'm not interested in that character, I'm not going to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I've always hated buying fighting game characters on their own, because I just end up owning, like, one of the DLC characters, and, like...
I don't like it either. I want to own them all.
Fucking hate them. Yeah, yeah. So
even the ones I don't want to play as, I want to have them.
Yeah, you got to have them. Especially if you're going to go online, like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a part of the balance of a competitive game. And... That just goes to show that Smash Brothers isn't as much of one. I'm gonna get hung.
When you leave here,
what are you gonna say? Smash Brothers.
I just know a lot of people that take Smash Brothers really seriously with the competitive fighting scene, and I don't think it holds a candle to a 2D fighter.
Yeah, I don't think of it in that way.
It's a wonderful party fighter.
I haven't played Super Smash Bros. Since it came out in the Nintendo 64.
Wow.
Serious. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're good though.
They're fun.
Yeah, I hear they're really great.
They're
fun.
Yeah, other than that, I mean that's kind of all. I've been playing Witcher and trying to beat that myself. So
what I'm going to play next is Hyrule Warriors, cuz I bought the damn thing.
Oh wow. I remember you bought that so long ago.
I bought it when it came out, and I was like, yeah, Hyrule Warriors, and my Wii U broke, and when I got it back, I beat Bayonetta 2, and the other stuff came out. And,
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, so I've got this $60 purchase that's no longer worth $60, and I won't fucking play it. It's going to be the next Witcher 2, five years later.
I have yet to beat Parasite Eve in the first Silent Hill, and I'll probably have that beat in like a year.
It's funny, because the first Silent Hill game, the only reason why I got it and picked it up, I still haven't beaten it either. It's like, it's not even 6 hours long. It's like really short.
It's still fucking creepy. As outdated as it looks, I'm still afraid to play it.
It's creepy because you can't control it for shit and the camera's horrible. So you're like you know you see like half a weird dog thing on the screen. Mm-hmm. And then the camera switches to this shitty angle. You can't see anything. And you know the thing's coming after you and it's right next to your face and you're screaming. You're like, you got the shitty D-pad that you have to walk around with and you're rotating with tank controls. The scary part of that game isn't... It's just the controls suck, man. they designed a game that controls and camera suck so bad that it works 100% now and it'll work. It'll be scary years later.
So basically you're saying you don't like it.
No, I like it. see, that's
just
what
the
makes...
controls suck.
Yeah, no, that's what makes a good horror game, though. It's like, there's two ways of doing it. When you limit controls from a player, you make a good horror game. Amnesia, The Dark Descent had... I mean, it was first person, so the camera was however you had it. But you walked slow. In first person, you're not used to that. There's no weapons. You run, man. Hide. Close the freaking door, I guess. Door didn't close all the way.
Yeah, I see what you're trying to get at now, and I understand completely. I think that's the reason why the original creator of Resident Evil, you know, took so long to change the whole camera angle aspect of his franchise.
And when he did, it changed the franchise from a horror game to an action-adventure game.
Yeah, well, I still thought... 4 at least was scary. 5 was not.
But. I wouldn't say 4 was scary. I'd say it was atmospheric. It had creepy atmosphere, mm-hmm. but I never felt that fear emotion you get when you play a horror game. And I didn't feel that either with Evil Within because it controlled too well. I was having too much fun, mm-hmm. like finding all the secrets. It felt like a Souls game in that it's mm-hmm. like, ooh, this is spooky, but like. I'm not feeling stressed out by what comes next because I know I can handle it.
I'm a lot more jumpy with games. So Resident Evil 4 and Evil Within, they definitely provide more of a sense of dread for me. But it's a commonly held thing that Resident Evil 4 and Evil Within, they're more action oriented games, and that's fine.
Yeah, oh yeah, it worked out for what it did. I even liked 5 in a way. Well, gameplay wise, I loved it, I guess. But well, yeah.
I think that we'll save the rest of this conversation for the horror cast next week.
Horror cast.
Other than that, you guys have anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right.
Time to put some clothes on.
Yeah. We are Pixel Chicken Gaming. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/PixelChickenPodcast. Follow us on Twitter. That's @Pixel_Chicken. Send us your emails, pixelchickenpodcast@gmail.com. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
See ya.